The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
You may have seen some of his work on big, huge murals on the sides of buildings. He's done murals along hoardings around construction sites. He's one of the very few full-time working artists in Ireland. He's going to be in the National Gallery in a while. He is known officially as Asbestos. I assume you have a real name.
I do, but for my artistic purposes, I usually use Asbestos, which comes from kind of the graffiti and street art community.
I have to ask the question, how did you get it?
It's a long and boring story. It's just basically about all the things that are around you, and asbestos is one of those things that's quite a shocking thing to discover. So it's about trying to jolt people out of the sometimes the malaise that we live in life.
Now, the National Gallery piece is miles away from graffiti art, but yep. Is it graffiti that was where you started? Were you a tagger originally?
Graffiti, street art, art. I see myself as an artist. Doing some stuff in the street is only part, a small part of what I do now, but it's all part of just being an artist.
Some of the stuff that you do is extraordinary in scale. I mean, cherry pickers, 30 feet yep. high, 20 feet wide. How do you... I've always been curious because I've seen your stuff and I've wondered, how do you actually go about creating an art piece that huge and that impactful? Do you start A4 and scale up, or do you just go with blank wall?
It's thinking about the context of the space. It's thinking about, like, say, for example, a Collins Street or Cork. You're given the wall already, so you know what you're doing. And sometimes it's a lot easier actually to paint at a big scale because you don't have to worry about the detail too much. If you're in a gallery, people can actually get really, really, really close and see the detail. So every job has its own kind of joys and
But does that mean that you have to do a bit, drop the cherry picker, walk 100 yards back down the street, take a look back at the cherry?
A little bit. You kind of sketch it out and you map it out in a grid and then you work out what bits go in there. And then, yeah, you do have to stand back. But
most artists that I know loathe people seeing their work in development. They like to have the big reveal at the end. Yeah. You're in the difficulty where you can't stop people walking down O'Connell Street or going through the centre of Cork.
Yeah.
Does that hamper you, or do you try to get it done fast so that it's limited?
There is a little bit of panic as well, yeah. There's bits where you're going, oh God, this is looking awful. But yeah, it comes together. So yeah, when I'm working in the studio and I'm doing another piece, I can fail. But when I'm doing it outside, yeah, the failure is seen. But only for a short period of time. You can fix it and then it stays for a while. So
how do you, and I don't wish to get all grubby about it, but how do you monetize that? Because I talked about you being one of the very few professional, consistently working artists in Ireland at present. It's very difficult to take down a 30-foot wall and say, I'll flog you this for your sitting room.
I have other, it's not my primary source of income. I have other sources of income of freelancing and stuff and work. But yeah, I think the way I approach it is every project has to, in some way, be giving me something emotionally or be giving back to the community. I can sell prints, I can get commissions. There's a lot of support, like the film we made, myself and Ross made, was supported by the Arts Council, a wonderful fund, Real Arts. So there is support. And actually, the arts in Ireland, we complain about a lot of things and there's plenty to complain about in every country. But the arts is supported fairly well in Ireland compared to...
That's unusual to hear an artist say that.
I know, and it's not enough. There's way too few spaces around here. There are supports out there. The Arts Council are trying their best with limited funds. Better is not good, but better is better than the UK, better than some countries. A lot of countries in Europe are better, but there is funding out there for things. As everyone is looking for it, so it is a dog-eat-dog world. But there's lots of different ways to...
How do you pick your themes? Because, I mean, obviously homelessness has been a significant theme recently, yeah. as has sort of mental health and mental well-being and sense of self. Do you try to stay within those boundaries and play on that field, or do you cast your net wide?
It's very hard to know in some ways. The mural in Cork you're talking about with homelessness, it was actually about home and homelessness and all of the things that home meant. So home could actually be, my home is 1,000 miles away, but Cork was my home for a period of time. Or somebody arrives in a country and they feel at home that they'd never felt before. So it was a provocation actually asking people, what is home to you? And that was very seriously about homelessness, but also the housing crisis, lots of other things. Picking a theme... Sometimes it's about a project that comes to you and you're trying to craft what your response to it is. It's about thinking about what the conversations are. I talk a lot about the fact that my work is trying to be a conversation, open up something. And I think leaving a gap for the public to feel they have a space to be part of that conversation is really important. I think telling a story and telling all of the facts and telling everything is really boring in the art that I want to create, because leaving a gap for people to be able to bring their part to it or interpretation. I've left a mural out there. People can look at it and get the completely wrong impression from what I expected, but that's their way of leading into it, and it gives them something.
Oh, so you're not didactic in saying, no, the way to interpret this is X, this is what I meant.
If I was talking to them, this, I'd say that's what I meant. But if you leave it out there, people will interpret it in a different way, and that's wonderful as well, because it often gives something back to me that I'm going, wow, I didn't think of that at all. And this is kind of wonderful and it's amazing. And it's an insight that I hadn't thought about. And those conversations, funnily enough, the conversations where somebody doesn't like it or doesn't agree with you are the ones that really make you think about, and you have to really respond and say, well, actually, this is what I meant or this is what I mean. It's much more interesting as an artist, I think, to be challenged rather than somebody to say, well, I have the exact same thought on this, because it, through that process, you have to think, what did I actually mean? Or think, you know what, I'm completely wrong and this person has brought something new to it.
Well, that interaction brings us to the National Gallery piece, yeah. Because you couldn't create something more dependent on interaction with the audience, because you are creating a piece of art that functions as an interaction with the people who listen to it. Explain what it is.
Well, the genesis of this comes from the film myself and Ross Killeen made, Don't Forget to Remember, which is a film about my mum's Alzheimer's and my artistic response to it. And myself and Ross worked on this since 2022, I think, and supported by Real Arts and shown in TIFF. But the film, through the me trying to find an artistic way of thinking about what Alzheimer's is and how it memories change, I created a series of blackboards based on family photos. So we all have stacks of family photos. Often we haven't looked at them for years, or somebody dies and then we're going, what were all of these things? What were these stories? So for me, those photos are important, but I think the oral history and talking about them and bringing them out and finding out who was that, when was that, where was that, all of these things are way more important than the physical object. So I took 15 of these photos, created chalk drawings on blackboards, and then showed them in Mazer's gallery as a one work. But then I took them off the walls and put them out onto the streets. So one was just around the corner from here on St. William Street. One was in Grogan's. One was in a stables in the Liberties. One was out on the beach in Sandymount for the waves to wash it away. And the idea was to leave chalk and dusters so that people could erase them, could draw on them. Some are completely gone, that there's no trace of the original drawing. Others are barely touched. And that's the nature of Alzheimer's. Some memories people can't remember something from 2 seconds ago, but can remember the colour of a childhood bicycle, or like, my mum's memories fade and sometimes she reminds of something and you're like, wow, where did that come from? Like in the film, she picks up a photo of an aunt of my dad and she just looks and she goes, she was an awful snob. You don't know where that's coming from. But then she'd come in and somebody she met 10 minutes ago, she doesn't know who they are. So the memories fade in a way that we just don't really understand, or I don't understand. Maybe the scientists working on Alzheimer's do, but it just is incomprehensible to me. So as part of that, I've then taken all of the blackboards back. The film is out. So the blackboards are kind of in aspic in some ways because they've been altered, but they haven't been changed since the end of the film. So as part of this run with the National Gallery and thinking about kind of how we have a new conversation around Alzheimer's and dementia, I've brought them back into the gallery in the form that they've finished as the film and shown them in the same layout as we had in Mazer's gallery. And they're all changed in mad ways, but I'm systematically started yesterday. I'm erasing them completely, which sounds like an act of destruction. And the word destroy, I've used a bit in this, but it is a provocation, but the empty blackboards that are there now, that I've erased everything, I've repainted them, they're just blackboards, they're no longer works of art. there's almost a lovely calmness to them, whereas the rest of everything is chaos because it's my drawings and people's drawings over them and tags over them and flyers and posters over them, and they feel just chaotic. Whereas now, by actually erasing them, it's possible to have the conversation and not worry about the chaos of like memories darting around and all of this information. And then the second part of the piece is a composition I've worked on with a composer called Kian Ryan, artist and composer. And he's created a 4-minute piece of music where it's my mum's voice in this beautiful soundscape and it's played through the gallery. But as that's played, we have a vinyl lathe, an old piece of technology from the 1970s, that will cut with a diamond stylus into a new piece of vinyl. So a fresh blank piece of vinyl is listening to the room through the microphone, taking all of the noises, the echoes, the people walking around, the conversations.
And your mum's voice.
And my mum's voice. And over all of that, we record a new piece and then we play that piece and record again and play that piece and record again for 49 times over. So we've 2 days left to do this.
So by the final iteration, she's lost.
Maybe something will remind. But actually, she's coming in. She's still around. So my mum and dad will be in today. So her voice will be on it. We'll record her voice anew and my brother's voice and mine and my nieces and my aunt and people in the gallery and conversations. So as much as it feels as if I'm letting that fade into the distance, new memories will be formed on that and conversations will be started. So memory is a pliable thing, and memories are, everyone here today tries to recount what happened this morning exactly, our memories will be quite different. But if we came back together, there'll be a stored memory in you that I've forgotten that I can kind of reenact. So,
but of course, that's the other interesting thing that a notion about that re-recording is that same with memory. Every time you access it, you change it.
Absolutely. And that's something I didn't know about. So the act of actually taking a memory down and playing it and then replaying it and putting it back is a very kind of almost scientific analysis of it. And it was only something that I found out about recently. So yeah, memory we think as a file that is absolute. But I love the fact that we can play around with this. And the more that I open this up within the family and within friends and family, the more you find out about stuff and you look at that photo and go, that wasn't there at all.
Is it too facile an assumption to say that this is your way of coming to terms with your mother's dementia?
It's partly that. No, it's not facile at all. It's with something like this, as an artist, you have to, or as a human being, you have to find ways to deal with whatever is thrown at you. As an artist, I have some tools that I can try and work with it. And I think what has happened with this is, rather than it just being about me coming to terms with thinking about my mum's memories fading and trying to grasp onto to things that are disappearing, it's also helping my dad deal with this. It's helping, one of the things he really wanted to do during the filming process was talk about this, because people don't talk about Alzheimer's in the way that they talk about other conditions, more so now. So it is definitely a healing process, but it's also a process in which hopefully it helps people have other conversations themselves.
Is it a particularly difficult illness to deal with in a loved one? Because if somebody is terminally ill with a physical condition, you and they can discuss it and to some extent can help each other, and you can help them in dealing with it and dealing with the challenge of it. With Alzheimer's, can you do the same?
Anton, it's like, the conversations I have with people, there was one of the team in the National Gallery who said to me, like, I won't curse, but she, like, it's so frustrating. It's horrific. Like, her response of somebody in her family having it was, it's brutal. And I used the word during the talk the other night that I'm destroying this work. And it's a provocation. And somebody said to one of my friends that they didn't like hearing me using the word destroy, but I understand that, and I'd actually like to have had that conversation. But it is brutal and it is horrible. And as early on in the process of myself and my brother and my dad trying to get to terms of how we deal with this, my dad actually said, God, I wish your mum had cancer. And I thought it was a horrific thing to say, but it was also, you know, it was so insightful, because he understood when other people talked about their partners with cancer, that there was an absolute, it can't be sorted, we're in remission, it's gone, or whatever, and people understand that, they go, you can do this, you can do that. Alzheimer's could like early onset Alzheimer's can kick in within months. A longer term diagnosis can take decades. So we don't know. It's an uncontrollable. You don't know when it's going to get worse. So
it must be difficult
about it. Yeah,
for those who are close to the person, I think there is an instinct when somebody doesn't recall something or when somebody struggles to be compass medicine in a conversation. There's an immediate knee jerk sense to blame them, to feel, yeah, ah, come on, try harder, as if they're doing it willfully. Yeah. That has to be an awful challenge to remind yourself all the time. This is not a deliberate act.
Exactly. And some people get very frustrated. My dad spoke of somebody he knew who they were so frustrated about their wife's Alzheimer's that they get annoyed with them. And he did at the start. Now my mum is actually very happy in herself, and that's a lot easier. But a friend of mine's father who has passed got violent. Other people have told me about their parents being very nervous around people because they don't know who they are and they get very anxious. So it manifests itself in so many different ways. We just don't know how it's going to go. And that's really frustrating for anyone having to look after. Like I often say about Alzheimer's is that my mum doesn't have Alzheimer's. My dad does. Because when you have a disease that's kind of like something like cancer, you're feeling it, you're feeling tired or you're feeling pain. Whereas with Alzheimer's, for some people, not for everyone, obviously some people suffer in different ways, but for the way my mom is suffering from it, she's not aware of her own Alzheimer's. But my dad is every single minute of the day. So she's actually in a very happy state in her own contentness. She's laughs and is wonderful to be around and is silly and ridiculous, and but not the same person. But my dad has to deal with all of the practicalities of life.
You mentioned earlier on about the interaction between audience and art. In that context, for your parents, for your mum and your dad, when they come to see and listen to the installation in the National Gallery, what's your hope of the reaction that you'll get?
I suppose there's my reaction, their reaction, and the public. Their reaction, they were in yesterday. They're proud. They're proud to see it in there. I think it's become a process over a couple of years. So they're used to me and Ross and everyone around and the talking about it. So in some ways, my dad has become an advocate of it. And he's done a talk at the Alzheimer's Society. And it can be difficult at times, but I think sometimes confronting that difficulty is can be cathartic. My mum and dad were standing there yesterday when I was erasing one of the blackboards, and it was a passport photo of my mum from the 90s. It was, honestly, it was very difficult for me. Some of them weren't difficult to erase because they'd faded away. But it was also kind of wonderful and hopeful, and there was other things. But when it was gone, I remembered that photo better and that finding it in a box or my mum at that stage than I did all of the chaos of it being slightly changed and the drawing. And I was no longer thinking about how I'd made the drawing or what it was. I was thinking about something else and then having a laugh with her. So a friend of mine said after seeing the film, she was going home to find all her old family photos and take them out and get her brothers and sisters to sit around. Somebody else leaving the space was walking out and went, a journalist from the Irish Times who was interviewing me yesterday came and said, I'm going to go and ring my mum. So what I would like people to think about coming into this exhibition or leaving it is not that act of destruction. It's actually how to think about memory in a new way and how to think about that collective memory and stored memory and asking questions. One of the photos in the film I always thought was in Dublin Airport. It was actually my mum and dad had flown from Dublin Airport where they got married in the church. They'd gone to London and then they flew out to Ibiza from Gatwick. And it's only a small detail, but they were standing in Gatwick, not in Dublin Airport. If they had never said that to me, I would have always said that's Dublin Airport. Now, it's a tiny detail, but it's all of those things that you only get from conversations. And I think I implore people this morning, dig out all those old photographs, ask who they were, ask who was that woman with Dad?
Maybe hold that question. If you want to see the work, it is in the National Gallery currently. How long is the installation in place?
Opened yesterday, and it's open today 12 to 5 and tomorrow 12 to 5. So by 5 o'clock tomorrow evening, all of the blackboards will be raised and the music piece will have been created with myself and Keane.
And if you want details, it is nationalgallery.ie asbestos. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Anton.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.